From the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's time for Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
Here come chainsaws killing the trees, softening everything that lives in peace. Animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. How can we stand by while this all takes place? We've got to stop this inhuman race.
Welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Each week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. And during this next half hour, we're going to have some announcements, and then we're going to have a special news report from Aeon Blue's field reporter for Earth First Radio Network. So stay tuned for that. In the stories you'll hear tonight about the folks who are killing the planet and the folks who have detailed information about saving what's left, they all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, or web addresses, so get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information, because this isn't couch potato radio, it's activist radio, and I urge you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, or making phone calls when you aren't in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sit, or locked down at the road blockade, of course. Earth First Radio can use your help. If you have announcements or news about what's going on in your bioregion, send it by email to cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or if you have to send snail mail, send it to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. To be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. Here's our announcements for tonight. Environmental attorney, writer, and activist Ray Vaughn has founded an internet magazine on the environment devoted to providing cutting-edge articles, editorials, poetry, short fiction, and news on environmental work throughout North America called Wild Zine. This new venture will attempt to combine the best in environmental writing with activism in order to educate and inspire the public. The premier issue will debut on June 1st. Wild Zine is looking for in-depth articles on environmental subjects, short news items, poems, editorials, short fiction for publication in upcoming issues. Be sure to send all proposals, queries, and finished pieces to Wild Zine by email, either in WordPerfect or ASCII format. Articles can be 5,000 words, short news up to 500, pictures in JPEG or GIF. Please don't send a whole lot of photos, though. If you want to write some poems, send up to 5. And unfortunately, no one's going to get paid for a while, but you will get full credit and links if you have them. Here's how you submit your stuff. The website is www.wildzine.com. That's WILDZINE.com. Or the email address to editor@wildzine.com. Sounds like good stuff here. If you're looking for some environmental information, here's a couple of websites. www.panix.com/tilde-dhenwood/lbo-links.html. That's, once again, that's panix.com, panix/tilde-dhenwood/lbo-links.html. That's one of them. And the other one, which Uncle Dennis finds a lot of good stuff on, is www.counterpunch, all one word, .org. That's counterpunch.org. And try their links.html page. That's good stuff, too. All right. Here's an announcement of Endangered Species Conference to be held June 4th through 7th in Washington, D.C. It's the Endangered Species Activist Conference. It's going to be held at American University in Washington, D.C. Don't miss this one. if you're going to be headed that way, this is an important event. Top endangered species activists from North America will converge in Washington to discuss implementation and reauthorization habitat conservation plan strategy for the next millennium. Here's the address: ESC Conference, 1101 14th Street Northwest, Suite 1400, Washington, D.C., 20005. Again, ESC Conference, 1101 14th Street Northwest, Suite 1400, Washington, D.C., 20005. And please send in your registration by May 17th. Excuse me, Uncle Dennis had a tickle in his throat, but hopefully he'll stay away for a while until I can get through these announcements. Need a job? Well, this isn't really a job. It's an internship, and it's available with American Forests at their Forest Policy Center. The Forest Policy Center is a program of American Forests, the country's oldest national citizen conservation organization. Where are you going to be? It doesn't say where they're located. Hey, they're in Washington, D.C. Okay, let's get going here. The intern must have excellent communication skills, creativity, a sense of humor, proven organizational skills, ability to work independently and a part of a team, solid writing skills, be computer literate, internet literacy. Applicants interested in forestry issues that relate to community study and environmental studies, forestry, political science, sociology are related. Salary is negotiable. I guess there is some money here. Application deadline is as soon as possible. You will be starting on June 1st for 3 to 6 months. You'll make a visible impact on timely issues, be part of a small team working on equal footing with experienced people, and chance for independent research or individual projects is there. You'll attend hearings, Mail or fax your cover letter and resume to Maya Enzer, M-A-I-A Enzer, E-N-Z-E-R, Director of Forest Policy, P.O. Box 2000, Washington, D.C., 20013. That's Maya Enzer, Director of Forest Policy, P.O. Box 2000, Washington, D.C., 20013. Or you can email it to mensor@amfor.org. That's an internship position starting soon in Washington, D.C. And here's an announcement of some action news. Nearly 200 environmental activists joined leaders of Colombia's Uwa tribe in a march through L.A. last week to protest Occidental Petroleum's planned drilling on the tribe's rainforest homeland. The demonstrators rallied in front of the oil company's headquarters at Wiltshire and Westwood with signs and giant banners demanding Oxy cancel its proposed project. 20 of the demonstrators marched out onto Wilshire Boulevard chanting Oxy out of Uwa land. They blocked traffic and they were arrested. All right. Upcoming events. There will be events in Houston, Texas on around the Maxam Board of Directors meeting starting Monday evening, May 17th, in front of Hurwitz's home. Tuesday at the Crown Plaza Hotel, there will be a strategy conference. And Wednesday, May 18th, at the Kaiser and Aluminum and Maxam shareholders meetings, rally speaking events and stuff, and there will be a march on the 19th. So all that stuff is coming up in Houston around the Maxam and Kaiser Aluminum shareholders meetings. Other upcoming events, May 18th through 20th, is the Bitterroot Ecosystem Management Research Project in Bozeman, Montana. And there's the Wilderness Science in Time of Change Conference, May 23rd through the 27th in Missoula. The 9th Annual Heartwood Forest Council in Traverse City, Michigan, May 29th through 31st. I'll have more time to let you know about more of this stuff in the future. We're going to get right into our interview now with A.N. Blues, and he will be talking with Julia Butterfly. Julia, in a couple of more days, will have spent 17 months in the tree called Luna in Northern California. So without any further ado, let's go right to Aeon Blues.
Aeon Blues, reporting for the Air Force Radio Network, and I'm speaking with Julia Butterfly over the telephone. Hello, Julia.
Hello there. I'm in the middle of a hail and snowstorm. My signal's cutting in and out a bit, so I didn't exactly hear what you said at the very end.
Oh, I said hello, Julia.
Well, hello there, Ian.
So you're in a snowstorm.
Yes.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah, well, this is about the seventh one I've been through this winter. It's the first winter up here in this over 1,000-year-old Redwood Tree Lerna was very windy and very wet and very cold, but not a lot of snow. And this time around, there's been a lot of snow. This is about the seventh, I believe, the seventh snowstorm I've been through.
Wow, that's truly amazing. Let's see, it was about a year ago that I first interviewed you, and then you were up for, like, over 100 days. So that means you've been up now for almost a year and 4 months?
Yes, that's correct. Closing in on 16 months.
16 months, oh.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know that it's very hard doing a tree sit for more than like a week or so. I know the average lifespan of your tree sitter is about a week or something like that. So I was wondering, what really keeps you like going up there? And
well,
why?
Well, no, Ian, it's honestly, it's all about love to me. To me, love is the greatest power in the universe. It is the source of creation. And it is that love, that source creation, that gives me the strength. And that and my prayer, which gives me my clarity, my guidance, and my strength, that's what keeps me going. It's certainly not easy, and you're definitely aware of that. But there's nothing to compare to doing what you know you're meant to do with your life. And right now, over this past 16 months, I've really felt like I'm doing what I'm meant to be doing with my life, to live in service for other life. The struggles and the hardships and the trials that come my way, I look at not as struggles but as learning lessons. And I've learned so much through everything, including the windstorms and snowstorms like I'm going through right now.
So what exactly do you accomplish sitting 200 feet up in an ancient old-growth redwood tree?
Well, we've accomplished many things. One of the things is to do everything in our power to protect the tree that we're in and hopefully some around it, which we have been able to do now for a year and a half now total for the tree sit, because this tree sit was begun in October of 97. I came up for the last time December of 97. So since October, it's been going strong, which is wonderful, because this tree is over 1,000 years old. It was marked to be turned into somebody's deck or siding. And it still stands in defiance of that, which is a huge success within itself. But above and beyond that, we have been able to reach out literally to the world. This morning, I just got done with an interview with France. And it's been all over. I just got a call a couple of days ago from Africa. And
Africa?
It's in Africa. And unfortunately, much of Africa has already been destroyed. Most of their forest land have already been destroyed. And they're looking at trying to rebuild and restore from what's already been destroyed. And hearing about this action has really provided them with more hope than anything else. Hope to know that, out of destruction, there is regrowth. There is, in every conflict, there's chance for resolution. And this action, I think more than anything, the biggest success of this action has been to reach out around the world, to people around the world, and say, look, there is hope. And we as individuals do have power. And in joining our individual power with other individual powers, we have the strength to defy corporations. I mean, Maxam Corporation, which is the corporation that bought out Pacific Lumber and whose destructive practices I and many others are protesting, is a huge corporation. And many people feel disempowered when it comes to corporations, and they just give up. They say, we can't make a difference. And this action, amongst many others, of course, this is not the only one, but this, amongst many, is reaching out to people and saying, yes, we do have the power, and we can take a stand. And these corporations have absolutely no right to destroy things that inherently belong to all life in all of its forms, such as clean air and clean water and a healthy environment. And I really believe that that has been one of the biggest successes we've had with this action now that's gone for about a year and a half now.
Wow. Now, recently, Maxam got its habitat conservation plan, also like Charles Hurwitz, of course, with that. Could you explain a bit about the HCP and its cost to the environment and to the public taxpayer?
Absolutely. The habitat conservation plan, for me, was the biggest reason why I could not accept the Headwaters Forest Agreement passed down and brokered through the federal and state governments with Pacific Lumber Maxam Corporation. Because the Habitat Conservation Plan, despite its misleading term, is based on destruction and extraction, not on protection. This area where Luna stands, including Luna, is indicative of the thousands of acres that will either be left out or destroyed because of this HCP. Because basically what a Habitat Conservation Plan is an amendment to the Endangered Species Act. We should have habitat conservation and protection every day, all day. It should not be something that's implemented here and there. And the problem with an HCP is that it says we will protect these areas, but in exchange, we want to be able to destroy other areas that should be protected. And many old-growth forests, thousands of acres of old-growth forests, will be destroyed of redwood and Douglas fir under this habitat conservation plan. Upslope, steep upslope areas like the one where Luna stands will be destroyed under this plan, causing massive loss of habitat for all species, both animals like the coho salmon and species of humans like the seven families in Stafford below who lost their homes under a huge wall of mud rushing down this hillside as a result of the logging on these steep slopes. This habitat conservation plan will make it legal for this company to dump 40 gallons of diesel fuel per acre onto their land to act as a carrying agent for herbicide after they're cutting. This is horrific because it's proven to cause cancer, and this plan makes it legal for them to dump carcinogens onto the land, which affects the land, the water, the animals, and humans. These are the kind of things that the Habitat Conservation Plan is going to do. And our government just paid close to half a billion dollars, for the permanent protection of the Headwaters Forest Grove and for this Habitat Conservation Plan. And what's sad is that for 50 years, it's going to lock into place these destructive practices. But myself and many others refuse to accept the destruction underneath this plan, which is why I'm still up in this tree. There's other activists up in the trees in the freshwater community whose lives have been severely affected by the destruction of the environment around them, and why there's activists still up in the area where David Gypsy Chain lost his life fighting to defend an area that should have been protected, which is another area sacrificed under this deal.
Yeah, could you tell us a bit more about Gypsy Freestate?
Well, about where they're at right now?
Well, about a brief overview of the history and where they're at now.
Well, what happened was activists heard about a logging plan, timber harvest plan, happening in the area, and they went on what's called a recon. They hiked in to check out the area and find out what this plan was going to do to the area and what the surrounding environment truly looked like, and found that it was some vital habitat and extremely steep slopes that nobody in their right mind should be cutting on. It's just, you look at these steep slopes and you think, what is wrong with somebody's mind to think that they can go in and cut on a slope that steep and not have adverse effects? As a result of what the activists found out on the recon, they decided to set up tree sits in this area that you are aware of as well, with a very personal basis. And they went in, actually the activists went in to try and stop the loggers from cutting, because they found violations of the laws happening in this logging plan. And the California Department of Forestry was called and asked to investigate these violations. But the Department of Forestry here, and actually I see it as an example across the country, they drag their heels long enough for the company to violate the laws and extract their timber. And then they go in and say, oh, yes, you violated the law, and give them a slap on the wrist. And it's more profitable for the company to continue breaking the laws than to adhere to them. And in the process of violating the laws, species are going extinct, water quality and air quality and land quality is being destroyed, and people's lives are being destroyed. So because of the history of Department of Forestry dragging its heels, the activists went into the forest to try and make the loggers aware that they were indeed violating laws in this timber harvest plan, and trying to get them to slow down or ultimately quit in logging until the Department of Forestry could go out there. And in the process of that one day, one of the loggers became very enraged and started cussing out and threatening the lives of the activists, started falling trees in their direction in order to scare them, and unfortunately took the life of David Nathan Gypsy Chain, a 24-year-old wonderful activist from Austin, Texas. After that point in time, the law enforcement agencies continued to refuse to protect the area in any way, even as a scene of a death where they should have protected it to find out the truth about David's death. And activists had to lock down to the gates and climb into the trees in an effort to protect the area that the government should have protected right away.
Yeah, one thing I want to interject really quickly is the police actually opened up the body bag to show off to the logger as if it was actually some kind of deer or something. That's their attitude towards political activists.
Right. Yeah, they have no respect, not only for the forest, but not for people's lives either.
Yes.
And they were going to allow the company to go right back in and continue cutting, even though cutting in that area would destroy the evidence to prove how David Gypsy Chain was killed. And activists were merely calling for justice, which is certainly not too much to ask for. And in the process, activists were pepper sprayed by the police. When the activists locked down, then and only then was the area cordoned off as a scene of a crime, and not when Gypsy was killed. And they violently attacked the nonviolent protesters with pepper spray, because the use of pepper spray on peaceful resistors cannot be deemed anything but violent. And activists took to the trees and have ever since been protecting the area where Gypsy was killed, calling for justice for the forest and justice for Gypsy's death. And there was indeed found two extremely serious violations incurred in that area by Pacific Lumber, and yet they are continued to allow to be allowed cutting and destroying an area where they should never have been in the first place.
Yeah, could you describe to us what a clear cut really looks like?
Well, you know, it looks like a battle zone. There's nothing left. They leave a few straggly trees in the middle of it sometimes, not all the time, so that they can say it's not a clear cut. But it's basically like someone mowing their yard. If they have tall grass and they go into the middle of it and just mow down a section in the middle, if you take that same scene and apply it to beautiful forest lands with 1,000-year-old trees, 200 feet tall, 300 feet tall, 100 feet tall, huge trees of all different sizes and species, plants, ferns, extremely big, 3 and 4 people it takes to encircle one single fern, an understory of these forests that go all the way down to the teeny tiny mushrooms of all different colors and sizes, down to the microorganisms in the soil, and just mow it all down. And then they follow that practice up with lighting it on fire and burning the whole thing, including those microorganisms that are vital for forest to rejuvenate itself and to be a healthy forest ecosystem. And they burn it all into desecration. And then they come back in and dump the diesel fuel and the herbicides and then chemical fertilizers and plant even-age trees. And if those even-aged trees are lucky enough to survive that onslaught, they call it even-aged management. And that's what they term that something that's nothing less than a absolutely desecrated, destroyed forest where no species can survive for any length of time.
Right. Now, also, somebody recently fell out of a tree. Do you know anything about that?
Yes. There was a young man who went by the name of Bird who was in the area where Gypsy was killed, protecting the trees, and he did indeed fall out. He fell an estimated 80 to 100 feet. And I tell you what, there was some kind of wings watching out for him, because all he suffered was a fractured pelvis, which is falling that far. He's lucky to have walked away with that. Well,
yeah.
He didn't walk away. He's been carried away with that, and now
he's lucky
walking.
To be alive.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he is walking now. He's almost completely off of his crutches and is almost back to full recovery, which is...
Oh, that's beautiful.
We're all very blessed for that to have been the case.
Yeah, too many people have already gotten hurt in that area. So
yeah, it's a hard struggle. We see death and dying every day. in all different forms.
Yeah, lastly, I want to know about your opinions of corporate media.
Corporate media I call the beast. And I call it that because it takes all the truth and all the passion and it chews it up. And what it spits out the other end is a watered-down, warped version of the truth. And it's really difficult to deal with corporate media. But at the same time, corporate media is what much of mainstream society listens to and watches. And we've got to reach everyone. And that takes dealing with the corporate media. And even though they don't get the whole truth out there, it does let glimmers into people's consciousness that something's going on. Hmm. And that's important in making the change we need. But ultimately, corporate media is a part of the very structure that we're defying, the very structure that we're challenging, that structure that is interested in a profit at the expense of everything and everyone else. And we are defying that through our actions in taking a stand for life instead of for things. And they tend to not, they don't allow that truth to come out because it would defy the very structure that they're built upon. But it's through that avenue that we're reaching people who might not hear about what's happening in any other way.
All right, so this is Aeon Blues reporting for the Earth First Radio Network.
That was Aeon Blues, Earth First Radio Network field reporter, talking to Julia Butterfly by telephone a couple of months ago, apparently. Remember, you can listen to Earth First Radio live right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM every Thursday night at 8 p.m., or you can listen to Earth First Radio on your computer at the World Wide Web at radioforall.web.net. That's Radio For All, the number 4. .web.net. You'll need a sound card in your computer, but the software you need is free on the website. Earth First Radio is being rebroadcast on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced by Earth First Santa Cruz in affiliation with the Earth First Radio Network. Our theme music is written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. Thank you for listening, and tune in to the next Earth First Radio show for more no-compromise news, views, poetry, and music. Now let's listen to some more Dana Lyons off his CD, Turn of the Wrench. This one's called Cry of the Forest.